The Rays say they'll be leaving the Trop. A big upset in a Sarasota House special election and a nightmare in a South Florida high school. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. It's our monthly news roundtable. In the studio with me are Zach Anderson, the political editor of the Sarasota Herald Tribune, Steve Newborn, WUSF reporter and assistant news director, and from the studio at NPR member station WLRN in Miami, reporter Jessica Bakeman. Hi, everybody.
Howdy.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here, Robin.
Jessica, you had the unfortunate job of having to cover the school shooting in Parkland on February 14th that left 17 people dead. Set the scene for me now. What's the mood and how are the students doing?
Well, I think it's interesting to sort of juxtapose the mood between two of the major events that have happened since the shooting. On Thursday night, there was a vigil that drew thousands of people, and at that event, it was incredibly sad. Everyone was crying. A father who lost his daughter got up on stage and gave a very moving but almost unbearably sad speech about how unfathomable it is what has happened.
That was just the day after it happened. They were out talking about it.
So I think, you know, then people were not even at the point of trying to make sense of it yet. They were just like still feeling the shock and reeling from it. And of course, people are still feeling that. But just a couple of days after that, on Saturday, you had a rally in Fort Lauderdale at the entrance of the federal courthouse there, where students, a lot of the seniors that survived the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, started to channel their grief and their pain and anger into activism. One of the students, Emma Gonzalez, her speech went viral online, and you know, they announced a movement they're calling Never Again, because they're saying this will be the last school shooting, the last mass shooting that ever happens, because they're going to fight to make a change to gun laws in hopes of addressing some of the issues here. For example, the use of the AR-15, they want to ban assault weapons, they want ways to keep guns out of the hands of mentally ill or unstable people who hope to use them to kill. And they were still grieving, of course, but also just full of momentum and energy, and since have announced a plan for a big march on Washington on March 24th. They're calling it the March for Our Lives. And I think they're hoping for something akin to the Women's March, where they have a huge crowd in D.C. and then also simultaneous protests in cities nationwide.
Right. I mean, adults have a hard time processing something like this, you know, for really children, young teenagers, to have to try to wrap their mind about what's happened. Steve?
You know, something tells me that this may be a little different than all the other school shootings. You know, she just used the word unfathomable. You know, I don't know how true that is. There have been so many school shootings around that we've become kind of immune to it after a while. But I think there's something a little different about this one, in just the fact that the students themselves are the ones who are getting motivated to go on social media to do these. I believe they're going up to Tallahassee, they're going up to Washington, like we just heard. And just the fact of like something like the Me Too movement that's still ongoing. I think that there might be something a little more long-lasting from this school shooting than all the others that, you know, we can't even remember how many there have been.
I totally agree. I think that, you know, Sandy Hook, obviously the kids were so young and their parents turned into gun control activists, but arguably that message is not as strong as the message coming from the mouths of the people who are actually in the school when this shooting happened in Broward County. And they also are a generation that grew up with the reality of active shooter drills and witnessing some of this violence in graphic detail on social media. And they're a generation that knows how to use social media to get their message out. They're very savvy. They're really showing that already with the organizing that they're doing. And I agree that that, you know, in the broader context of the Me Too movement, of the women's marches, of the kind of sense of renewed activism that we've seen recently, that, you know, they really feel that they can make a difference. And I think we will be hearing about this for a longer amount of time than we did
they
with
do,
the others.
Right. But Zach Anderson, this is a Democratic part of the state. These are probably a lot of Democratic families. This could be different if it had happened in, say, the panhandle of Florida. I think what's helping them with this gun control message is the area of the state that this took place in.
Yeah, and it'll be fascinating to see if anything happens here. You know, there's been plenty of mass shootings in the past. And, you know, after Sandy Hook, there was a huge push for gun control measures that fell short in Congress. Democrats and Republicans tend to have very different ideas about how to respond to these and how to limit, you know, gun violence. And Florida is a legislature that is controlled by Republicans. And in the past, they've really pushed for more gun rights, the idea that a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. And you saw a little bit of that even last week. There were some bills that have been kicking around in the legislature that would arm people in schools, and it was going to be on the agenda this week, and then it was pulled. But gun control measures face a huge hurdle in the state legislature. As Democrats in the legislature are talking about, there was a tweet put out by one of the Democratic leaders in the House about trying to grind everything to a halt, potentially, to try and make a statement on guns and get an assault weapons ban. But it's very unlikely that the Republican legislature is going to go forward with anything. They've been talking more about mental health, addressing that, trying to get more funding. That does seem an area where you can get some bipartisan support. They were initially talking about $40 million to address mental health initiatives in schools. Now they're talking about bumping that up to $100 million. They're talking about hardening schools, making it more difficult to get into them. But Democrats are going to push hard on some of these gun control issues, and it'll be fascinating to see whether or not any of them can gain any traction.
And Jessica, to get back to what's happening down there, what's been the response from the local school district?
The district closed the school for the remainder of the week after the shooting took place on Wednesday, and they announced that school's going to continue to be closed and that they're hoping they can get students back by Tuesday. They were talking about Superintendent Robert Runcie of Broward County Public Schools has said that they're trying to be careful to think about what students need, how students are feeling about returning, and also to work around the calendar of funerals, because as awful as that sounds, they don't want to make families there choose between sending their kid back to school or going to one of their classmates' funerals. And, you know, they were talking about having an increased law enforcement presence on campus and having lots of grief counselors available. They've had lots of grief counselors available throughout the district since it happened. And also the legislature has talked about demolishing Building 12, which is what they call the freshman building. That's where most of the shootings took place.
Now, this is a three-story, $30 million building that they're talking about demolishing and rebuilding, is what I've read.
Yeah, you know, I talked to State Senator Gary Farmer. He's a Democrat from Fort Lauderdale, and he and some other lawmakers went on a tour of the building, and he told me about it. He said it was just absolutely horrific that you could walk around and see the remnants of, you know, what looks like typical school, right? Like backpacks and papers and cards and carnations left over from Valentine's Day, but then also blood splattered on the walls and bullet holes, and apparently evidence that the alleged shooter tried to shoot through the third floor windows outside like a sniper, but wasn't able to get through because of hurricane windows. So he just said, you know, it seems like there's a recognition from everyone involved that they can't ask students to go back in that building where the site of that horror took place. And so they're going to tear it down. They're going to build a new building somewhere else on campus. Robert Runcie, the superintendent, said that in the meantime, it's going to be tight, but they've reworked the master schedule to accommodate all of the students and teachers and classes in the existing buildings on campus. And they're going to work with the families to eventually figure out a memorial for the site of that building.
Jessica Bakeman of WLRN in Miami, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Florida Matters. We're going to take a short break now. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham. It's our monthly news roundtable, and our guests are Zach Anderson from the Sarasota Herald Tribune and Steve Newborn, WUSF's assistant news director. So, continuing a little bit with what's going on with the Parkland school shooting, Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd, who's now the president of a big sheriff's National Sheriff's Association, says he wants to get bills passed that would put specially trained staff on campus with concealed weapons and give law enforcement more leeway under the Baker Act to detain someone. I know Sheriff Scott Israel of Broward County had also asked for that. So what are you hearing on that front? I don't think the bills for putting the staff on campus with concealed weapons is going anywhere.
No, I think that got set aside late last week. This is an idea that has been kicked around in the legislature for a few years now. There's a state senator, Greg Stube, from the Sarasota area, who is a staunch gun rights activist. And after some of these shootings, he has said that maybe the best idea would be to have people in the schools who are trained and designated to carry weapons so that there is somebody there to respond to a shooter potentially. And he used the example of like a rural school where the police couldn't respond as quickly. And, you know, there's all different views on that. But I think a lot of especially people in the school system are very concerned about what would happen if, you know, one of those guns got loose in the schools. So the idea has moved forward in the legislature in the past, but it hasn't been able to pass. And it seems like they are setting it aside for this year.
They may be expanding, though. Maybe they'll do something with the Baker Act to expand that and make it easier to confiscate guns from someone that people close to them think are unstable.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a universal interest in making sure that mentally unstable people don't get guns. But there have been these proposals in the past, and there's a question of due process and, you know, is it a slippery slope? How do you determine whether somebody's mentally unstable?
Well, everyone says do something, right? But when it actually gets time to figure out what to do, it is a slippery slope, because if your child puts something stupid on social media, which I will tell you young teenage boys are apt to do, do you want them to be arrested when they think it's funny?
Sometimes it's not necessarily being arrested or Baker acted. There's been these ideas.
They're being arrested right now. The teenagers in Polk County who have been making threats are being arrested, which I'm not saying they shouldn't be. I'm just saying it is happening.
Well, there's an idea that's been put out there that's more of just a restraining order where you're maybe able to confiscate somebody's guns for a few days or weeks or whatever if they're judged to be mentally unstable while they go through some sort of evaluation process. That seems less intrusive potentially than Baker acting them or arresting them, obviously. So there's all different grades of how you approach this.
Yeah, I think the only way you're going to see any kind of legislation is through this avenue you're taking. It's kind of the anti-gun control people. They're afraid of going down the slippery slope, like you said. So I think the one thing everybody can agree on here is restricting guns to the mentally ill. Having said that, you know, this is not a panacea either, though. The worst shooting in the country, the Las Vegas shooting, that guy, Paddock, didn't have any kind of mental health issues. He wasn't on anybody's radar. So a bill like this wouldn't have prevented that either. So it makes you wonder really how much it can accomplish.
Right. It's a hard issue. So gun control is a rallying cry for the Democrats. And the Democrats did make a little inroad into state politics with an upset win for a House seat in District 72 in Sarasota. Zach, tell us a little bit about that race.
Yeah, this was a really unusual race that really had ramifications far beyond this little Sarasota House district.
And why is that?
Well, because it's a special election that's being held in February after Trump's election. I think everybody has really been looking to see where the energy is in politics right now. And people have been closely watching some of these special elections around the country in the lead up to the 2018 midterm election in November to sort of read where the the tea leaves are indicating the political sentiment is. And so each one of these races all around the country has sort of become a proxy battle and a sort of a bellwether for what's happening as we go into this midterm election period. And the Sarasota race certainly was that. It got national attention. There was national media that came down. There was national political figures who were involved, former Vice President Joe Biden.
It was kind of amazing. This is a special election for the lower house.
Yeah, for a state house seat. I mean, these are usually—
No one pays attention to those outside of the county.
These are usually really, really sleepy races. Mm-hmm. I've covered elections for this exact same legislative seat for a number of years now, and usually it's not even all that competitive, and even if it is, it doesn't typically attract a whole lot of interest from the general public, but this one just really took on a life of its own.
Steve, did you tell us a little bit about Margaret Good, who won this seat?
Right. So Margaret Good, she's an attorney. She was basically recruited for this position because, you know, the Democratic pool in Sarasota in the last few years has been pretty shallow.
She was the more moderate of the candidates in the primary, I
right.
believe.
Yeah, exactly. She bested a little more left-wing kind of candidate in the primary. But she raised more money than the Republican, Vern Buchanan's son, James Buchanan. Vern is the congressman from Sarasota, so no shortage of money or fundraising possibilities on his end. She outgained him on the fundraising end. And just the fact that she was able to get somebody like Joe Biden and Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland and presidential candidate on her side, shows you the reach that her campaign has. But it also shows you the Democrats, how vested they are in creating some kind of momentum here leading up to the midterm elections. I mean, there's talk of what they call a blue wave.
What was the turnout like for each party?
It was pretty pretty substantial. For a special election, it was 36%, which going back and researching online, the supervisor of elections in Sarasota County went and looked at whatever special election turnout results are available online. They only go back to 2003, but based on those numbers, it would be a record for turnout in a state house special election. So it really showed that there's a lot of interest. Now, it still isn't the same type of turnout that you would get for a regularly scheduled November election for a midterm or a presidential year, but it was a huge turnout for the type of race that it was.
But do we know how it broke down by party? Did the Democrats—
Yeah, there was more Republicans came out than Democrats. This is a seat that has 12,000 more Republicans than Democrats. So the Republicans have a significant advantage, but there's a huge chunk of independent, no party affiliation voters who really can swing things here.
Let me give those numbers. I'm going to round them down a little bit, but 51,600 Republicans, 39,600 registered Democrats, and 30,500 no party affiliation.
Right.
That's where the difference comes
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it is. And it also, it seemed like Margaret Good also pulled some Republican votes, though. She had a very strong turnout operation that went out there and kind of got reached out to voters and got them to the polls.
Steve.
Yeah, you got to wonder how much of a legs this has. You know, the Democrats are fully energized right now in the wake of Trump's presidential win. So two factors you have to take into account here. One is the interest of the National Democratic Party in this race that you can't replicate when it comes to the general election because there are just too many races. And the other thing is this district has voted Democratic in the past, so it's not that much of an anomaly we're looking at here. Keith Fitzgerald, I believe he was a Democrat, got elected
right.
twice to this not
mm-hmm.
too long ago. So
we don't know how much we can really extrapolate this.
Right. You don't know how much of a bellwether this race mm-hmm. is. That remains to be seen. But the Democrats are on a roll right now. There's no doubt about it.
And the bottom line is this is a district that when Keith Fitzgerald held it, it was slightly more Democratic leaning. It was redrawn after the 2012 redistricting to make it a little bit more Republican. This is a district that went for Trump by nearly 5 percentage points. So it is it's definitely a Republican-leaning district, but it's not an overwhelming Republican district, which makes it a really good example in some ways because, you know, those are the types of districts you have to win. If you're Democrats, to take control, you probably have to win a few seats that are Republican-leaning that Trump won. So these are the types of seats that you need to win to take control.
They're going to put some money into into the congressional race against Vern Buchanan. Yeah. They're feeling like it's in play a little bit.
But Steve's point is a good one. You know, once you get to the November ballot and you have all these races at play, do Democrats have the resources to invest like they did in this special election? That's a big open question. In Florida, at least in the past, they haven't been able to play in a lot of these races just because they've been outgunned in terms of the resources that they have. And then you also have the question of, is a special election with lower turnout really indicative of what's going to happen in November? So,
of anything.
Yeah.
So moving north from Sarasota, the management of the Tampa Bay Rays held a press conference and announced their intention to move to a new stadium to be built in Ybor City. Steve, this was the first public declaration that they'd be leaving St. Petersburg. Is that true?
Right. There's been talk for years of the Rays moving to the Tampa side of the bay just because, well, they have the worst attendance in Major League Baseball, for one. And people complain about the stadium. I personally don't buy into that argument. I mean, I wouldn't be outside in the stadium in August in this climate. The talk of building a new stadium in St. Petersburg didn't really catch fire for the most part because they'd still have that attendance problem. Now, most major league teams have a majority of their season tickets are owned by corporations. That's why you have all these suites there. It's usually 2/3 season tickets are owned by corporations, 1/3 by the regular fans. Here it's flipped around. There are so few corporations based in St. Petersburg and Pinellas County that the majority of the season tickets were owned by just regular fans, and it wasn't enough to create a sustained base. So the idea is by moving to Tampa, closer to the region's economic center, you'll have these corporations, these big shots buying a lot of season tickets in a smaller stadium that wouldn't have 50,000 seats. So they're looking at getting a lot more corporate support in Tampa than they would in St. Pete. Whether or not they can get the money to build this, that's a whole other ballgame.
So they say still to be determined. Who will pay for this? How much will the city of Tampa pay? County of Hillsborough? I don't know.
Well, Mayor Buckhorn has gone on record saying, yeah, don't look at us for the huge chunk of change. The Rays have only promised to cough up maybe $115 million, I think is the number I've seen.
$115 million. How much would this stadium cost?
Well, you're looking at a retractable roof stadium, and these things are well north of $500 million. $800 million is the usual term that's bandied about. You know, after cost overruns and whatever, it's over $1 billion. So where's the money going to come from, right? This is a county that rejected a referendum on mass transit not too long ago because it would cost too much tax dollars. We're not going to see a repetition of what happened with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the 1996 community investment tax that paid for the huge chunk of Raymond James Stadium. But that was also for roads and schools, and I can't see that being replicated in today's Tea Party climate. So where's the money going to come from? You know, who knows? Is this going to happen? They may end up going back to St. Pete. They may end up going to Montreal.
Because they've got another 4 years in St. Pete anyway, and they're going to invest something, $4 million this year, I think?
$7 million, actually, in Tropicana Field. So they're invested in keeping, you know, the fans. It's a very fan-friendly confine. You know, the big question is, where's all this money going to come from? And are the taxpayers willing to chip in?
And if they're looking to the legislature, they better think again, because there's a big anti-corporate welfare sentiment in the legislature right now. There's been bills that have moved ahead that would ban the state from investing any money in public stadiums. So they're not going to see a lot of support in Tallahassee if they start going up there with their head out.
We've been speaking with WUSF Steve Newborn and with Zach Anderson of the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
Great to be here.
And earlier we were joined by Jessica Bakeman of WLRN in Miami. We've got a new way for you to contact us. On our website, WUSF.org, there's a green button that says Start Recording. And we'd like to record your comments for an upcoming Florida Matters that we're producing on online learning and Florida virtual schools. Because all public school students now have to take an online class in order to graduate. What's been your experience with online classes? You can also email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. Also, check out our podcast, Florida Matters More, wherever you get your podcasts. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is George Govan. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.